Factory. My name is Will Nalton. A pleasure as we are joined in studio. Very rare that we get in studio guests on this program, but again, we're joined in studio right now by the play-by-play voice of the Flames. It is Derek Wills. Hello, Derek.
Good afternoon. The microphone sounds so much better in here.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Better than the hot stove lounge, better than a telephone. Crystal clear in downtown Calgary. Well, you are you know, the floor is yours, my friend. We can start wherever you want, but I guess the place to start is your reaction when you saw the news yesterday. The Flames have parted with Glenn Gullitson, Dave Cameron, and Paul Gerard.
Well, I'd like to say that I was surprised, but the truth is I wasn't completely taken aback by the news. I thought at the end of the season there was probably a 50-50 chance that they would make a coaching change, and I wasn't sure what the coaching change would look like. I thought there was a chance they might let go of some of the assistant coaches and keep Glenn Gullitson. Wasn't quite sure what direction they were going to go in, but you know, the more I heard, the more I saw, when Glenn Gullitson wasn't at the table with Brad Treleving, when he addressed the media on locker cleanout day, I thought that's probably not a good sign for the head coach. But, you know, on a personal level, I was upset to hear the news. I certainly had more of an attachment to Glenn Gullitson than I did to Bob Hartley. Gullitson was just wonderful to work with from my perspective. I'm sure Peter Labardius has said the same thing to you. He gave us 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 minutes after every media scrum on game days. And, you know, sometimes we talked about the Flames. Sometimes we talked about hockey, other teams. Sometimes we just talked about life. And I really enjoyed getting to know him, as well as Dave Cameron and Paul Gerard. But the team had high expectations internally, externally, didn't meet them. Do I think that is 100% on the coaches? Absolutely not. I think that there's plenty of blame to go around, but you can't fire all your players. And someone had to pay the price. And unfortunately for those three guys, it was them. And I do have full confidence that Brad Treleving has a plan here. And I wouldn't be surprised if in the next week we hear who the next head coach of the Calgary Flames is. I suspect it's probably a pretty short list at this point.
Now, you mentioned it, maybe not overly surprised. We kind of all were waiting to see what was going to happen with this group. And I'm curious your thoughts because, you know, and it's not final by any means at this point, but the decision to part with the bench guys and leave the guys upstairs, Jelena, Pringle, and Sigalet for now have stayed. It's tough to just say that, you know, more coaches are responsible than others, but obviously they have parted, you know, this way. They've done it this way in the past with Hartley. But I'm just curious your thoughts on the decision to move just the bench guys and keep them upstairs.
Not completely surprised, because when you look at Martin Jelena, Jordan Sigalet, and Jamie Pringle, they survived the last coaching change as well. So not surprised that they survived this one, or appear to have survived this one. I don't think there's going to be any more changes there. I guess if a new head coach comes in and wants to bring all of his own staff in, then that's a conversation he's going to have with Brad Treleving. But I would actually like to see Martin Jelena given more responsibility. As a matter of fact, and you know, it's easy to sit here and second guess what was done, what wasn't done last season now. But when the power play was struggling the way it was, I did wonder at the time, why not give someone else a crack at getting this PP going? You know, with the career that Martin Jelena had, thought he might have been a good candidate to do that. And he's a guy that sat up in the press box and watched every game, and much like the other coaches, and believe me, you know, traveling with these guys, you see it day in, day out. They worked hard. And the worse things got for the Flames, the harder those guys worked to try to fix those problems. But I thought he was a guy that could have taken on more this season, and hopefully will going into next season. I think Mike Smith really likes Jordan Sigalet. And for next season, Mike Smith is going to be the Flames' number one goaltender. So that relationship is important. And I think Jamie Pringle is just so important to this team. Not only does he do a great job on the video side of things, but he's got a great relationship with players in that dressing room as well. And I think it's important to maintain that relationship. And, you know, Brad Treleving talked a lot about continuity, how important it is. And it's not the be-all, end-all, but it is important. And I think keeping these guys on board gives the Flames some sort of
continuity.
That
little bridge, right?
Right. So you're going to bring in a new coach who's going to have to learn about the players and teach them a new system. But you've got these guys here who can build that bridge or form that bridge and hopefully close that gap. And hopefully it doesn't take the Flames until Christmas to learn a new system. You know, depending on what coach they bring in, maybe they play a similar system because, you know, people forget that going from Bob Hartley to Glenn Gullitson was really like apples and oranges.
Mm-hmm.
Hartley was all about blocking shots and defending. Gullitson didn't want to block shots because he didn't want to spend that time in the defensive zone. He wanted to be on the attack.
We all know that, you know, for the majority of his time as the coach of the Flames, I mean, the Flames consistently were the stretch pass team, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they always tried to stretch the ice, and under Glenn Gullitson, they encouraged forwards to stay low, and I think that now we're probably going to see an easier transition. It's not going to be as dramatic as kind of what your point was, right?
Right. I still think blocking shots is important.
Right.
And the Flames probably didn't do enough of that this season in hindsight. Now, they didn't have to do as much this season because they spent way more time in the offensive zone under Glenn Gullitson than they did under Bob Hartley. And if that's the case, you're not blocking as many shots. But, you know, blocking shots is still something that you have to do if you want to win, especially when you get into the playoffs. And Flames aren't there now, but hopefully they will be next season. And I think one of the ways they can get there is by paying the price more so than they did this season. But the system is going to be interesting when the new head coach comes in. I suspect it will probably be some sort of hybrid. You know, there's been a lot of talk about Bill Peters and of the advanced stats that I tracked all season, and I'm still trying to wrap my head around some of the numbers and what they mean. The Hurricanes were number one in every category of the three main stats that I track. So Corsi close, and then the shooting percentage one. So, you know, Glenn Gullitson's Flames were top four or five in all of those categories as well. But for the Hurricanes and the Flames, that didn't translate into wins. So is that the be-all end-all? Or is it maybe a hybrid of what we've seen from the past two coaches? You know, being willing to block some more shots, but also, you know, you're trying to spend less time in the defensive zone, more time in the offensive zone, because that's where you're going to score and your opponent's not. But I also wonder if they maybe bring that stretch pass back a little bit, try to activate their defensemen a little bit more often moving forward, because for me, that was the strength of the team when the season started, Will, their defense core.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they can maybe get a bit more from those guys offensively and maybe take a bit of the pressure off their top two lines, which, let's face it, they had to lean on way too much this season.
Last one on the Flames, then we'll chat a little playoffs. But, you know, we were kind of just chatting about it off the air briefly, but you know, this move is made. They changed coaches. But I think, you know, you would agree. I know Pat said as much. Lou's talked about it. Rob's talked about it. Whenever you guys are on the Flames roundtable or we're chatting off the air between games and whatever. I think this is maybe just the first step in what is going to be, I think, a fairly busy offseason for this group.
Yeah, I would agree 100%. Now, what does that mean? That's the big question. So they don't have a lot of draft picks to work with. They could trade their first round pick in 2019. But,
and I think there's probably people that would say, you know, their biggest need is maybe a little bit different. Like I feel that it's probably in the forward group. You know, some people would say it's fixing your defense, whether that's trading a piece away or just fixing, you know, tweaking with what you've got. But I think there is a different way you can go about it. What do you value? What do you want to part with? What do you, you know, because there's a limited amount of assets this team can move this summer too, right?
Well, that's the thing. They don't have a lot of draft picks to work with.
Unless
you're
moving from the NHL roster.
Right. So you could deal from your position of strength, which is on defense, both at the NHL and AHL levels and in junior and college as well. Do I think they're going to move Yusuf Alamaki? Absolutely not. Do I think they can move Adam Fox? Yeah, I do. I really do. But we'll have to wait and see. They're not going to just give him away. But if that means moving him means they can fill a hole somewhere else, then I think that's something they'll look at. Will they move a goaltender? Will they move John Gillies or David Rittich or Tyler Parsons to open up a spot at the AHL level? Will they bring in a more experienced backup for Mike Smith before the start of next season? All good questions. But, you know, for me, they need to add a top six centerman or winger. For me, the game changer, Will, is John Tavares.
Mm-hmm.
And people might think that's some sort of fantasy. But I think the Flames could put a pretty attractive offer together. The ownership group has proven over time it's willing to spend right to the cap, and they've got a bunch of money coming off, so it's going to free up some money for Brad Treleving to work with. And the opportunity to play with Johnny Gaudreau might be pretty appealing for John Tavares. And if they were to get him, could you imagine having John Tavares, Sean Monahan, Michael Backlund, and Mark Jankowski as your four centermen? I mean, it took me a while to come around on the Golden Knights, but the more I watch them, the more I wonder if that's the direction the league is going in, Will. Because they just come at you with four lines. It's mm-hmm. like they've got 4 second lines, and they're absolutely relentless. So maybe it's
not... And
the
Boston Bruins are similar, too.
Very similar. I think the Predators are similar as well. They just keep coming at you. And there's not a lot of drop from the first line to the second line to the third line to the fourth line. That wasn't the case with the Flames this season. Huge drop from the first line and second line to the third line and fourth line. So we'll see what they do, but John Tavares would be a game changer. And I'm not convinced that they have to get a scoring winger if they can bring in a high-end center like right. him or Ryan O'Reilly or someone along those lines. But I think the easiest way to fix your forward group is to bring in a right-handed winger who can score goals, and ideally a guy who plays with a bit of an edge. I don't know if Mark Stone's going to be available, but he would fit the bill. Brendan Gallagher, these guys will be expensive, but that's just the type of player I think I'd like to see them add if they don't go down the road of being able to get a Tavares or an O'Reilly or somebody like that.
Well, we'll certainly have lots of time to talk about the Flames and what they might do or what they should do this summer. The Flames parting ways with their coaching staff, and as Derek talked about, I think we're going to probably find out who the next head coach is pretty soon. Four games on the ice tonight, but I should ask you overall, because we haven't really talked to you, or I haven't talked to you during the playoffs. What has kind of caught your eye? Is there one series that's jumped out to you, or are you kind of like Robin saying this first round is maybe disappointing compared to years past?
Well, it's been really disappointing and surprising for me, because I really thought that the Pacific Division series were going to be long ones. And Seven-game series.
Really, they've been...
Well... They have in a way. I mean, the Sharks-Ducks series has really disappointed me.
Yeah.
I was having a hard time picking that series. I went back and forth, and I finally settled on the Ducks in seven because the Sharks kind of stumbled down the stretch, and the Ducks wound up passing them, were playing really well. And I thought, you know, they've got a bunch of guys who are holdovers from their 2007 Stanley Cup championship team. Sharks don't have Thornton. I just don't know. But the Sharks, they keep surprising me. I mean, they've done it the whole second half and right into the playoffs, but I thought that was going to be a long series and a tight series, and it hasn't been. Now, the Golden Knights-Kings series, it was a short series, but I really enjoyed watching those games.
10 goals in four games.
Crazy. Low scoring usually doesn't kind of float my boat, but, I mean, those were intense hockey games, and I'm won over by these Golden Knights. I mean, they are so impressive the way they can come at you. I picked the Kings to win that series in seven. I just looked at the Golden Knights defense corps and I thought, how?
Yeah.
How did they win the division? How are they going to win a playoff series against a good Kings team? Well, they did it. And they did it in four games, and they did it by playing great defensive hockey. Now, Marc-Andre Fleury was obviously a big part of it as well, as he's probably playing as well as anybody on the planet right now. But you know, that series was disappointing in a way because it was short, but I really enjoyed the hockey for the most part. The Maple Leafs-Bruins series is an interesting one because I thought that would go seven as well. And then the Bruins walk all over the Maple Leafs in games one and two. And then the Maple Leafs, who couldn't catch a break in the first two games of that series, finally got some in the third game. And now I'm wondering, is this going to be a 6 or 7 game series? Can the Maple Leafs really push the Bruins here? So I think those are the ones that have really jumped out to me. But I guess the other one that would be of interest is the Blue Jackets-Capitals series.
Mm.
That's another one I had a hard time picking. I know the Capitals won the division, but there's something about that team that just, it doesn't feel right. Maybe it was the goaltending going in, Philip Grubauer starting over Braden Holtby, and I get it. Holtby hadn't won since December, and Grubauer played really well down the stretch, but we're talking about a former Vezina Trophy winner and a guy who's considered to be one of the elite goaltenders in the league, and he's backing up Grubauer in games one and two. I was having a hard time wrapping my head around that one, so I ended up picking the Capitals in seven. Now, the Blue Jackets win the first two games, and the thing I like about the Blue Jackets the most, they've got a 2-time Vezina Trophy winner in net and Sergei Bobrovsky, and I think their defense corps is as good as any, if not the best, in the Eastern Conference. I think there are a couple defense corps in the Western Conference that are better, but that blue line is young, and it's good, and it's deep. They're going to be a tough out.
Yeah, they are, and Bobrovsky's a big reason for that because obviously he's had his playoff demons in the past, but he's been lights out in three games so far in that series. They lose last night in double overtime, but they're still on home ice with a 2-1 series edge. What about, I know that, you know, Nashville probably hasn't played their best hockey, but I got to give a lot of credit to Colorado because they're pushing them hard. No Varlamov, no Eric Johnson, no Girard, and yet here they are down 2-1.
They're the second most surprising team in the league for me this season. You know what? Maybe even the most surprising, because we didn't know what to expect from the Golden Knights.
Their win total almost matched their point total from last season.
It's crazy. And they were the worst team in the league last season in every way, shape, and form. It was tough to watch them some nights. It was embarrassing.
And everyone's like, oh, Jared Bednar can't coach in this league. Well,
he was put in a tough spot. I mean,
how fair is it when you're there August 18th or whatever it is?
Good luck to you. And they had some veterans in that room that didn't buy in, and that made it impossible for him last season.
But and he had an unhappy Matt Duchene.
Yeah, I'll tell you, he was number one on my Jack Adams ballot. I get to vote for the coach of the year. He was number one for me. Sorry, number two, Gerard Gallant was number one for me. But those guys have both done a great job. But the Avalanche, I don't know how they've done it, Will. I mean, the Golden Knights, you look at them, and they've got some really good players. And, you know, they weren't healthy in net for a good chunk of the season, but now they've got their number one guy back, and that's a good team. I look at the Avalanche, and I don't see a good team. I see a team without their number one goaltender. I see a team without their number one defenseman. And I see a team with one line. I don't know how they've done it. I really don't, but I give them a lot of credit because they just won't go away. I didn't think you said they would get in, and I thought, you're nuts. You know, how are they going to beat out teams like the Blues? I mean, the Stars, much like the Flames, didn't push like we thought they would, but how are they going to beat out the Blues? But they did. Beat them in the final game of the season to get in. It was an amazing run for the Avalanche, and I still think the Predators win that series in five, but this was a win this season for the Avalanche for sure.
Who's impressed you the most in the postseason? Like maybe not the way that the standings ended up or how they played in the regular season, but who's impressed you the most in the postseason?
The Golden Knights. I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury's been brilliant.
Yeah.
The team has been great defensively in front of them. They don't give you time or space.
We all thought they were just going to have to win in the playoffs like they did in the season, which is score a lot of goals, but it turns out they can play defensive hockey too.
They weren't all that good in the last third of the season.
Played about 500 for 2+ months.
Yeah, and a team that you couldn't beat in Vegas.
They lost like 8 games on home ice in regulation down the stretch.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it was something, and I thought, okay, the league's finally catching up. But and then they come into Calgary, and the Flames blow them out 7-1 in the final regular season game. And I thought, oh boy, this is going to do one of two things for the Golden Knights, wake them up and get them going, or you know, could crush their confidence going into the playoffs. But that has been just such a great story for the league, and a little bit scary, because we expect another expansion team in Seattle. And what some people might not know is that the Golden Knights don't have to provide a player for that draft. They're protected from it. So they're not going to get any weaker when the new Seattle team comes in the league. They're not going to have to give up a player in the expansion draft. But I just think that's been such a great story. And I just love the way they play. They just don't give you anything. And if you let up for a split second, the puck seems to end up in the back of your net. I think there's been some sort of magic. I think the hockey gods have had something to say about what's happened in Vegas this season, but I hesitate to say that because I don't want to take anything away from the Golden Knights. George McPhee did a great job drafting a team that can not only be good now, but can be good down the road, although that deal they made for Tomas Tatar doesn't look very good right now. And I think that Gerard Gallant is making the people in Florida look pretty foolish for putting him in a cab and sending him out of town. You kind of wonder where the Panthers would be if they would have stuck with him behind the bench, but he's done a great job coaching that team and making them difficult to play against. That's the one thing that just keeps jumping out at me. When I saw them in person, it jumped out at me. When I watched them on TV, it jumps out at me. They are just in your face from start to finish. Mm-hmm. And if you take a shift off, that might be it. Mm-hmm. Case in point, what was probably the swing game of the Flames season. Coming out of the All-Star break, they had an 11-game point streak. We're in a playoff spot. We're up 2-1 late in the third period against the Golden Knights. And then in a span of 10 seconds, they're down 3-2 and wound up giving up another one and losing 4-2. And the Flames weren't the same team after that. And that's all it takes against a team like that. And you know what? They have something that the Flames didn't have this year, and you hope they get back next year. They have belief. It's amazing what belief can do, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Belief builds confidence. Confidence leads to good things. When you believe you're going to score and you believe you're going to win, you tend to do it way more often than not.
You know, it's funny you were talking about the magic and all that, because they do have that feeling to them. They're better on paper than Calgary was in 14-15, but that was your first season here. And I know that you've made the comparison before. It feels a lot similar to that season. Now, as I mentioned, the Vegas Golden Knights, a bit better on paper, a bit deeper than the Flames were that year. But just the magic and the belief, because the Flames, you know, whatever the score was after 40, felt they could always come back.
Yeah.
And it feels like the Golden Knights have that same sort of swagger to them right now.
Yeah, the 2017-2018 Golden Knights, certainly better in goal than that Flames team was. And I think better at forward as well.
Yeah.
William Karlsson's had an unbelievable season. Beyond him, though, they don't have the high-end talent right. the Flames had. Sean Monahan, Johnny Gaudreau, Yuri Hudler had a great season that year. But I look at the Golden Knights defense corps, and I think that's the most surprising thing for me, Will. I thought Derek Engelin was a big loss for the Flames, not only because of what he did on the ice. I thought he was a really solid third-pairing defenseman, but the intangibles, the toughness, the leadership. But he's taken his game to another level, and he's done it well into his 30s with the Golden Knights. But you look at their blue line, on paper, it doesn't look like much. But a guy like Braden McNabb, where'd he come from? He looked like a bubble NHLer for
came
a couple of
came from the LA Kings and eliminated the LA Kings last night.
Isn't it incredible? I mean, I still look at that defense corps on paper, and I wonder how they've done it, how they've played so well defensively. But I think it's their team game that impresses me the most. It's not all about their goaltender. It's not all about their defenseman. It's not all about their forwards. They're always playing as a five-man unit out there. The forwards supporting the defenseman. The defenseman supporting the forwards. They're a ton of fun to watch. And you know, I thought, okay, they're going to have one great year, and then they're going to come crashing back down to earth. But nope. The more I see them, the more I believe that these guys are going to be good, and they're going to be good for a long time. It's going to be interesting to see, Will, what George McPhee does during the offseason. He's got lots of money to work with. Mm-hmm. He's got lots of picks and prospects to work with. Does he bring James Neal back? Like, that's a big question. Does he make a run at Erik Karlsson or another big fish? It's going to be really fascinating to see what that team does during the offseason and to see if they use some of the assets that they acquired leading up to and then during and after the expansion draft to make themselves even better for next season. And that's going to make the Pacific Division even tougher for teams like the Flames.
Absolutely. And I guess it leads us kind of into the nice ending to this chat. And that is, you know, you mentioned Seattle. And I know that Elliot Friedman talked about it on Sportsnet last week. I'm not sure if you saw it in one of the intermission chats. He was talking about, you know, that Seattle group. Expansion rules are going to be the same for Seattle in 2020. But it also has that feeling that every GM in the league understands it, knows it a little better, and are not going to go to the same lengths they went to this time to protect their own players. So, example, you know, giving up a first and a second round pick to protect player X off your own roster. I think, you know, Elliot's point was every GM is just going to say, okay, let's lose one player and be done with it. Let's not, you know, trade away all these assets. You look at Florida and what they traded, Marchessault and Riley and all these picks, and, you know, they lost their head coach. There's going to be a lot of, you know, smarter decisions made, I think, going into the next expansion, which is a bad thing for Seattle, but it's a good thing, I think, for the league because, you know, I think teams are just going to say, okay, let's lose a player off our roster, be done with it, and move on with our offseason. I think that it's going to be really fascinating to see how teams adjust because I think now, especially with they're seeing the success they're having, they're saying, we don't want to get burned again.
Yeah, the new Seattle team might not be as good as Vegas was this season, but I still think they're going to be good.
Yeah, they're still going to have their players.
Because the same rules apply.
They just won't have as many picks, I don't think.
Right. Teams might just say, listen, we're going to give you our ninth best guy, and we're going to move along. Instead of all the backroom deals that went on leading up to that expansion draft, and was listening to our last game of the season last week, and Shea Theodore was acquired for expansion draft considerations, those types of deals. I don't think we'll see as many of those, but I really think that the new Seattle team, if their general manager does as good a job as George McPhee did for Vegas, they can be competitive right away, and I think that's important. More so probably in non-traditional hockey markets like Vegas, like Seattle, where you're trying to build the game. And in the case of Las Vegas, getting in there before the NFL and yep. establishing the NHL in that market first, I think was really, really important for the Golden Knights. And clearly, they've done it. They've got a giant jersey on the Statue of Liberty awesome. Outside of New York, which is incredible. And, you know, having been there a couple of times now, it's just it's a great place to watch a hockey game. They've got that park area outside of the arena. And the fans gather there, generally visiting teams fans, gather there before games. It's a really good hockey market. I wasn't sure if it was going to work, and I didn't know because I had never been to Vegas before this season. But I'll tell you, it's working great. The run they've gone on is going to help them really establish themselves in that market, and I hope Seattle works as well. They've got more of a hockey tradition in that market than they had in Vegas, and it'll be interesting to see how general managers, not only the general manager of the new team, but the 31 other GMs handle that expansion draft when it comes. But looking forward to that, and it should be fun to watch.
Yeah, and one more stop to the list for you guys. But yeah, it's going to be fun, and we'll see what happens too when Seattle comes in the league, because obviously some more realignment questions too, because they're going to be in the Pacific region, right? And kind of find out how they're going to work that Western Conference. But it's been fun, and the Golden Knights are off to round two with a 4-0 sweep over the LA Kings. They'll face the winner of San Jose and Anaheim in round two. Can they make
it? So the Sharks.
Can they make it to conference finals, though?
Yes, absolutely. They can.
You think so?
I think it's going to be a great series. I wonder if Joe Thornton comes back. I know they're not going to rush him back, but I think that'd be a big boost for that team. Not that they really needed him in the first round, but the fact that they haven't had to rush him back, I think it's going to help their cause down the road. I think it's going to be a fantastic series, or at least I hope it's going to be, because I thought the first two series involving the Pacific Division teams were going to be great, and they haven't been. They've been short. And that Ducks-Sharks series has not been competitive for the most part. So we'll see. I think that one could go 6 or 7, but at this point, I give the Golden Knights as good a chance as anybody not named the Predators in the Western Conference to get to the Stanley Cup Final.
Thank you for this, sir.
Yeah, it was fun.
We love chatting hockey with Derek, and he's going to be doing a month over the summer, so we can listen for that. I believe, 2 in the afternoon, 2 in the morning?
Yeah, 2 weeks on the morning show, 2 weeks on the afternoon show. I think my first week is the first week of July. So hopefully I'll golf sometime between now and then.
Are you a little upset you can't be golfing?
A little.
Right now? You should have went with Gilbertson to Canmore or whatever.
Yeah, did. I didn't get the invite.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Awkward.
Yeah.
Well then.
I might have to hit the driving range though. I got a putting mat in my basement. You've seen that.
So yes, I have.
Might have to pull the putter out, just start putting, practice. It's a 7-foot mat. Last summer, I was bored one day, and I sank 250 putts in a row from 7 feet. I went to the golf course the next day. I was so confident. I'm like, I'm not gonna miss a putt.
Three in a row.
I could not make a putt. Could not make. I was hammering everything past the hole. Terrible.
There's no break on your mat, though. Maybe that was the problem.
Well, and there's a little ramp right at the hole.
So you have to use a little more power.
A little more juice on the putt, so you... Anyways, yeah, the good news is I haven't lost any balls in the rough yet this year, so there's that.
This would be a great time to use that drop, but I don't have it ready. Anyways, thank you, Derek.
Okay, have a good day.